Hello, my name is Susie DeJong, speaker, coach, and author of The Untangling. And this is the Untangling series podcast, where we untangle our own unseen and unspoken chains that bind us to open up the way for us to experience more joy and peace and healing than we ever thought possible. So come and join me. Put on your comfiest clothes, grab a cup of something hot, or maybe even a glass of something bubbly. Put your feet up and let the untangling begin. And welcome to the next episode of the Untangling podcast. I think this interview for me personally may be one of the most groundbreaking I have done. Meet Michael Atmer, one of the coolest, most connected guys I have had the privilege to meet. And when I say connected, I don't mean socially. I mean with the out there, or maybe you might phrase it as spiritually. It's not often I meet men who are on the same plane of thought or awareness as I have had the privilege over the years to discover for myself. But Michael is certainly one of them. Michael calls himself a freedom coach. He is also a best-selling author, has created an amazing and highly successful meditation app called Meditation Dojo, as well as being highly experienced in the Japanese martial art of Aikido, otherwise known as the art of peace. He is both a student and teacher of Aikido, guiding others on how to handle life's ups and downs with a calm yet assertive space of awareness. Michael is what I would call truly an awoken man. Join us as we discover what led Michael to realize that there was more to his life than the everyday. How, like me, he never felt like he fitted in to the norms of family and society. And how he went from having a highly successful career in his 20s, traveling the world first class and living the first class lifestyle, to losing everything and actually living on the street. At that time, not surprisingly, debilitating stress and anxiety was ruling Michael's life. And like many men, he says, he didn't share what he was going through with either his family or closest friends. In our chat today, not only does Michael share, he was happy to share from what many would term as vulnerability, from what he has learnt from that experience. However, vulnerability is, as Michael explains, and I know too from my own experiences, not a dirty word. It is actually an empowering one. This is Michael's story. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the next episode of the Untangling podcast. I'm so thrilled to have with me today a dear friend and colleague, Michael Atmer. Michael and I met about 5-6 years ago at a wonderful retreat called The Bridge Experience, run by Alexi Panos and Preston Smiles. And there was something about Michael and I that we just connected, and we've stayed in touch on and off ever since. Michael is one of those few males that I have ever met who has, I guess, what you called awakened. And that's something that can happen to us at different times in our lives. But for me, it happened for me in about my middle ages, where I felt really lost and unsure of where I was going and found another way to live through all of that. And Michael has gone through the same thing. He has so much wisdom to share. He is involved in martial arts, in a beautiful meditation app that he's created. He has authored books, and he is the most amazing personal and business coach and I'm so thrilled to have him here with me today. Thank you, Michael, for being here.
Oh, thank you, Susie. Thank you for inviting me on as well. I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, let's see where this goes. This is going to be fun and totally organic.
Totally fun, because I have to say, people out there, I've already stuffed this intro up three times. So we're going for the fourth. Michael and I, you know, we don't see each other for a little while, or we're not connected, and then we connect again, and it's just so joyful. And I just love being in his presence. And I really wanted to talk to him today because through the work that I've been doing in coaching and speaking over the years, I've found this real, I don't know what to say, not lack or a black hole of care and support for males, not just males, but that's something that keeps showing up for me a lot. And Michael just has a different way. And that noise in the background is my dog drinking water out of her bowl. Sorry, but we're dog people, and that's okay. I just feel that Michael can really touch a lot of people with his story of where he was and also what he's learnt along the way. And when we talked the other day, I said to Michael, I know about you in the last 6 years or so, but I know nothing about your background. And his beautiful wife, Nadine, piped up and said, oh, there's a story there. So I thought I would love to find out what the story is, and then we will talk a lot more about what the work that Michael does now. Mm. So can you give us an insight into the story?
Yeah.
What are you willing to share?
I will do my best. And I got to say, these days for me, and perhaps some of you listening to this right now can relate to this, it's more and more challenging for me to go back to the past, because I don't live in the past anymore, and I certainly don't live in the future either. And the more I found, the more present I become in my life, the less the past is even real. But anyway, let's see how we go. So for me, when I was 10 years old, I kind of noticed that I felt like I didn't fit into this world. I felt like I wasn't from this world. And some of you might relate to that. Mm. I felt like an alien here, really. It didn't make sense to me. My parents didn't make sense to me. My dad was he was like an overbearing guy, passive aggressive, very emotionally suppressed. So he didn't ever show his emotions. And so in the household, my mum was always like walking on eggshells around him. So she was like a nervous wreck the whole time. So my impression of the feminine energy as I grew up was the nervousness that came around the masculine when the feminine didn't feel safe, which was my mum, to express herself in any way. And so for me, I had to shove my emotions down too. So I had zero emotional capacity at all. So I lived in my head. I lived in a fantasy world. I read books, comics, science fiction. I watched all the science fiction shows. I kind of got lost in this fantasy world I created in my head, a little bit like, you imagine you're living in Harry Potter's world. But that was my escape. I found I had to escape because it wasn't okay for me to be who I was, even at a very young age. And so that was kind of like, for me, a pivotal. Yeah, I had to go through that. By the way, whatever we have to go through in our childhood, it's intentional, even though it's unconscious. But for those of you that can stretch your mind a little bit, before we're born, our soul picks our parents for us because we need lessons. There are lessons we need to get that we didn't get in our past lives. Whether you believe in them or not, I'm not here to tell you that it's right or wrong. It's just, this is how I see things. So, my lesson was the emotional intelligence that I needed to have in this world to become who I am now. And I had none. And I certainly didn't want to, as I got older, I looked at all the jobs. I went to like job recruitment day at high school, where you look at all the career paths and universities and so on. And I applied to a few universities and I got in, but it didn't feel right. And I looked at all the jobs out and I thought, I don't want to work in a job ever. And my dad was constantly on my case going, well, you got to make money. You got to settle down. You got to, what are you, how are you going to feed your family and all that nonsense that we hear as we're growing up. And I said, but I don't want to do that. That doesn't sound like a model of life I'm interested in. And he couldn't understand that. He just thought there was something wrong with me. And so, yeah, I wandered through this job and that job. I had 27 jobs in, or careers, if you will, in an 8-year period. I literally just went from one to another.
Wow.
Like 8 years.
That's crazy. Searching.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was. I was searching. You know, I even did a year of college in amongst all that. So I was searching for what I was here to do. And I literally couldn't find anything I was interested in, none of it, because I just felt there's something inside me that needed to, that I was here to do something different, but I had no clue what it was. And I know a lot of people can relate to that, because we all feel instinctively that we're here for something more than just, say, working for a living, retiring, and then dying a couple of years later, maybe 5 or 10 years later. You know, that's kind of the model most of us are shown of life. Get a job, retire, enjoy your life then. Good luck with that, by the way. Because you got all these aches and pains and shit going on with your body normally by retirement age, say around 70. And yeah, because you've worked so hard. And how can you go and enjoy yourself now? Because you're physically not as capable. So that was a ridiculous model to me. I want to live and I want to enjoy myself and I want to have an adventure. I want life to be an adventure, or it's just a waste of time. So I don't know where that came from, by the way, but that was in me from when I was born.
Ask you, as a teenager then, going, you know, having this experience that you were having, like, and I totally agree, because I always say, like, I feel like aliens dropped me off at the wrong house.
Yeah.
And that's not disrespecting anybody. You know, we loved our parents, but that's just how we felt. We felt like we didn't fit in. What was that like with your peer group as a teenage boy growing up?
Yeah, so that's a good question too. So with my peer group, I didn't have a lot of friends. The ones I did, I was quite close with, but I was fortunate that I went through a time where we didn't even have a TV in our home. So, you know, another outlet for me was sport. And martial arts. So I went and I did every sport I could, because for me, A, it got me out of the house, which made me happy. I hated being home. I literally hated being home, and because it was so dry. It was just such a dry experience. It was emotionally like dead, dry. It was tense. I was never beaten, which I'm grateful for. But there's other ways that you can be abused, you know, other ways that it's that you're terrified or scared as a child.
Emotional abuse, but
yeah. I mean, I didn't know
and
about
as,
that.
As we said, we're not judging. It's just people.
No,
know
it's
what
just
they
the way
know.
It was. I don't judge that either. Now I can see why that had to happen for me, and that's the other thing. Things now I know that things don't happen to me; they happen for me. So that happened for me back then because I needed to wake up. In a sense, that was part of my waking up process, and so I got into sport and I really excelled in sport. And so through sport, I connected with other kids, and that's how we became friends. So that's how I was able to connect on that level. And I'm grateful for that, because now, even at my age, right, I go away on holidays and sometimes I travel with groups of people and people who are half my age, and I can keep up with people that are half my age and even better than that, because I'm so fit and healthy and have so much energy, so much vibrancy. I'm very strong. And martial arts I've been doing now since I was 15. It's something now that my body is very, it's made my body very strong. And I believe that I had to have a strong body because of what the work that I do. And I want to be able to continue to do the work I do until I can't walk, you know, until I can't move. So for me, having a healthy, strong body, which was also another thing that I got from my parents. So my dad did an exercise. He was overweight. He didn't like to exercise. And so that mirror, because, you know, our parents are mirrors for us, as are our siblings, as are people in our lives, that mirror showed me that I didn't want to be like that. I didn't want to treat my body that way. So that's when I really went into sport, because I never wanted to get overweight, as example. I just didn't see any benefit in it. And I also wanted to be fit and healthy, because my dad would get out of breath just walking upstairs. And I go, I don't want to end up like that. And then I had all these models in the world of people like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Lee, which are also not healthy male models, but they were kind of like my role models for the masculine. I'm going, well, why can't we look like a Greek god? And why can't we be super warriors? Why can't we have this warrior energy and be able to protect and defend and those that are not as privileged as we are, or those that are not strong? And so that, a lot of that had an impact. But then, of course, I had to find myself in that as well, which I did. And so, but those principles of being, for a masculine anyway, for a male role, for me now, is like, have a strong body, be able to defend yourself, but also be able to protect those that you love and that you care about, that if you need to, at a time when you might need to, instead of just panicking and losing your shit. but also the mental strength that comes from that. I find people very weak in the mind these days. They're very weak-minded, and they give up so easily, and they kind of collapse so easily mentally and physically, and they get ill all the time because they're not strong. They're not strong in their mind, and they're not strong in their body. So I'm very grateful that I learned, I self-taught, and then I went and studied how to have a very strong mindset, the mindset of somebody who never quits, the mindset of somebody that's unstoppable, the mindset of somebody who's just really confident with who they are and comfortable with who they are, but have the body that backs it up as well. It's really served me well. So the main thing that I learned from my childhood was it kind of taught me, because I've always been an observer. I like to observe and then implement things that make sense to me. And so I've always been, it taught me so many different things about finding myself and who I am in amongst the world that tries to, from when we're very young, kind of manipulate us into becoming like another cog in the wheel in the world, rather than becoming an independent, empowered person who lives their dreams, who lives what they love, who wakes up and enjoys every day because it's enough.
And it's a totally different world now with social media and the pressure to be the same and alike and achieve ridiculous things that aren't even real.
Yeah.
So I feel really grateful we didn't grow up in that.
Oh, yes.
But tell me about the moment in your 20s after you'd been, going through all these different jobs, and you got to this point in your life where you had a huge breakthrough, shift, breakdown. I don't know. What would you call it that really changed your life for you?
All the above, because for me, a breakdown is a breakthrough. A lot of people see breakdowns as something negative. For me, now, as I look back and as I've been going through my transformational journey, every breakdown has led to a breakthrough, every single one. So after those 8 years of doing 27 different careers, including a year at college, I was no closer to feeling fulfilled at all. I still had this empty space inside. I was making a lot of money. My last job was in an airline. It was in Qantas. And I was making a lot of money, and I was traveling the world. And from the outside in, people were very jealous of the lifestyle I had. I didn't even own a car because I was flying all the time. And I could fly around the world for $120. And I had a great life. In a lot of ways, I had a great life if you look from the outside. I had friends everywhere. Everywhere I landed, I would have people I'd meet, and we'd go out and hang out. I was like a single man's dream. I was making good money. I had like friends all over the world. I was always hanging out with hostesses and flight attendants and people that worked in the travel industry, and they all liked to party and have fun. But we're still superficial. It was very superficial, and it was tiring and it was exhausting on another level as well. But it still wasn't, my soul was still feeling empty. It was still feeling unfulfilled inside. There was something missing. And I had no clue what that was, because now I'm kind of stuck working in an airline, and that's really the only thing I could do. It's the only skills that I had. But then anyway, one day, the universe always provides. So one day I knew for about 3 years that I needed to leave the airline, but I didn't know what to do. I still didn't know what to do. And so the universe conspires for us always. And we think it's, well, why is this happening to me? No, it's happening to us because we weren't making the right choices consciously that are in alignment with what we're here to do and be. And I didn't know that then, but then the universe came along and it kind of pulled the rug out from under me in my job in Qantas. And so I lost that job. I got retrenched. So I lost that job. But when I left that job, when that job was taken away, I had no money. I was in massive debt because of the lifestyle I led. And I had no other skill set because airlines at that time weren't hiring anymore. They were like having a very, really bad slump in their business. So I lost my job. And at that time, as I said, no savings, massively in debt, and my confidence was shattered. So that pulling out of the rug shattered my confidence. In like, I would just sit in the corner of my room in my unit that I was living in. I would just like have my hands around my knees and I would just kind of be trying to shake myself to sleep because I was having panic attacks. Financial stress was my big trigger at that time. So I was having panic attacks. I would just sit there worrying about money, the power, paying the power, getting food. And then eventually I lost the unit because I had no money. I had no confidence and I was doing nothing because I basically was frozen inside myself, just like frozen. Fear had taken over completely in my life. So I was just absolute wreck. And I lost the unit as well. So now I'm homeless and I'm walking out in the streets and I'm sleeping wherever I can to stay warm. I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. Basically, it was the lowest point in my life. I was in my mid-20s, which, you know, I just come from a very high-fluting lifestyle, traveling the world first class and, you know, staying in five-star hotels everywhere. But it was shallow. You know, it was a great lifestyle for those that want that, but it was, for me, it was very shallow. And it had a big impact. I was drinking a lot of alcohol at the time when I was in Qantas. So I was basically an alcoholic and spending and living like a rock star, but I wasn't a rock star. So I found myself out in the street. And this was for about 6 months. And then one day I realized, you know, this can go one of two ways. Because I was, as I said, debilitating stress and anxiety was ruling my life. And I was so proud. I never called my parents. They didn't know about it at all. They didn't know this was going on. It's a very masculine thing. It's a very male thing. It's a pride thing for men. And a lot of men today that I have worked with, I see it in business leaders and managers. They have a lot of pride around and they don't like to feel that they've failed or they don't like to feel that, you know, that they've made a mistake. They bury it. They're trying to hide it, which is what I was doing. But I didn't know that at the time. I just knew that I felt too ashamed to reach out to my parents because of what I had been. And in their eye, I didn't want them to look at me the way I knew they would look at me with judgment. And so I was also not emotionally enough aware of how to deal with that. So I buried it and I lived out in the streets and I had to deal with it myself, which in hindsight was actually a good thing because if I had gone to my parents, they would have rescued me. But would I have got the lesson? So I had to build myself up from scratch because my confidence that I thought I had because of where I was in the world was fake. That confidence was borrowed. I was only confident because I was making good money. I was only confident because I had a good job. I was only confident because of my lifestyle. I wasn't confident with who I was at all. It was all because of the things I had and the things I did. But that's not real confidence. Confidence is being okay even when you feel like you're falling apart inside. That's real confidence. And you can express yourself and your vulnerability with absolute. You feel okay with that. Even though you feel like you're breaking apart, you're still strong enough to be able to withstand that and do what you need to do and be who you need to be. I didn't know that then. You know, my confidence came from the outside, not the inside. So this was me rebuilding my confidence from the inside. And to cut a long story short there, I learned how to become confident again in my vulnerability. So vulnerability became my friend, not my enemy.
Well, vulnerability is, you know, such a powerful word for all of us. But men and vulnerability is a whole nother thing.
It's huge. Which,
as you're talking about, is the way we're brought up, is the way society is. I mean, this is so important to me, this particular topic of men being able to be vulnerable. Yeah, and women, but, you know, we're brought up differently. Women speak to each other, they unload. Men, it's shame and it's... So how did you break through that? I can't be vulnerable because of all this success that I've built up in this, scenario of what people see, to letting Michael be vulnerable. What was the moment that changed everything?
Accepting that fear was controlling my life, not love, because I'd started at that point, I'd started going to meditation classes too, because I was also too stubborn to go to the doctor and get treatment. And I also didn't feel right for me to go and be medicated to feel better about myself. I knew enough about myself that that wasn't never going to work for me. And I've always been a researcher. So one day a friend came along and I didn't tell my friends either. None of them knew what I was going through. So a friend came along one day, I caught up with him and he said, "Hey, I'm," and he could see that I was a little bit down. And he said, "You don't look like you're doing okay." And I said, "Oh," I didn't go into the story, but I said, "Yeah, no, I'm actually feeling pretty down at the moment." This is when I was still living on the streets. And he said, "Well, I'm doing this meditation class once a week, a group of 10 of us, we just sit in a circle, and this lady kind of does this. Walks us through this meditation stuff." And in my mind, because I hadn't come from that world, meditation for me, and at that time, meditation was really not in vogue. Like even yoga wasn't really in vogue. It was kind of in the background and it's like whispered about and people made fun of you. So it certainly wasn't as it is now, which is quite acceptable, part of the norm, mainstream of life kind of thing. Everyone's doing it. And there's apps all over the place. That wasn't the case. So for me, it was like, oh my, because I was very logical, intellectually orientated, not emotional at all. And my intellect went, oh, what's this meditation crap? I don't want to do that. So there was this huge resistance to it and very cynical. I was very cynical about it. But I thought, what have I got to lose? There was part of me just went, well, what do you got to lose? Your life's shit anyway. Maybe it'll help. Maybe it'll help you sleep at night at least. So I went along. And this sweet lady welcomed me at the door. I went and sat down, did the first night's meditation. And the funniest thing happened at that little circle, right? This is in Melbourne. And I'm sitting down in the chairs here, closed my eyes, and she's walking me through the forest and all of us there. And anyway, I went off with the meditation, having time of my life, actually enjoying this little visualization. Anyway, and then everything was quiet. And I thought, why did she stop talking? And then I opened my eyes and there was nobody in the room. What's going on here? Where is everybody? And she was standing behind me with her hands kind of over my shoulders, just above my shoulders. I didn't know it then, but she was grounding me. And I turned around and I said, what's happening? Where is everybody? And she said, they went home. I said, huh? And I said, when? She said, half an hour ago. I said, what? I said, how? I didn't hear a thing. She said, no. She said, you went into deep meditation. She said, you've been traveling, just not in the physical world. And she said,
Wow.
I'm just standing here holding space for you because I could feel that you were way out of your body traveling. And I knew nothing about that either. I went, oh, whatever. And I said, but inside me, this spark was lit. What happened for me during those 2 hours? Because that was a 2 hour time frame, by the way. And the class only went for an hour. I'd been gone for an hour and a half. Hour and a half traveling. So I needed to understand my intellect at least. Had a question. What is, I got curious. What happened for me during that 1.5 hours? And why was I not aware that I was doing that? So that led me then on the biggest adventure of my life, which was my awakening moment and opening up to my feminine side, to my emotions, to the vulnerability that we spoke about. All of that happened as a result of me being curious about what is this meditation stuff and why, what actually happened. And that led me to go and study with an enlightened teacher at an ashram for 3 years, and then on and off for about 10 to 15 years, going back and forward. We would meditate 12 hours a day. As an example, in the ashram, meditate 12 hours a day. We'd be doing all sorts of spiritual studies, not just on one thing, but Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity. We were studying all things because everything was included and it was all part of love, so to speak. Nothing was discluded. Everything was part of God. And I'm going deeper and deeper, and I'm having these, this might confuse a few people, but I'm having these transcendent experiences where I'm experiencing myself beyond the body as consciousness, and then coming back to my body with a memory that of where I'd been and what I was doing and what I was experiencing. And then I started becoming awake in my dreams. So what that means is, and some of you may relate, when you're having a dream, you actually know that you're having a dream while you're in bed asleep. So that's what I call being present or awake in your dream, which happens as we start to open ourselves up more energetically to different levels of vibration simultaneously. But it was fascinating. And I was all in. And, you know, my dad thought I was part of a cult, that I joined a cult. And, you know, he's kind of, because he's police, right? He's a policeman. So he was a superintendent of police force. So he was like law and right and wrong and judgment. And that was kind of his mindset. And I got it. You know, he's just concerned about my well-being. So he was convinced I was part of a cult. But I knew I wasn't part of a cult because, A, I could leave anytime I wanted, and B, the experiences I was having, no one was doing them to me. I wasn't having drugs. I wasn't doing mushrooms. I wasn't having LSD, none of that. This was, and for those of you that have done drugs, the experiences are actually that level of hallucinate. Like you're hallucinating, but you're full on in that hallucination, and it's real without drugs, drugs.
So, I've actually... And I know you do breath work as well. And I've got an amazing team around me who do breath work here on the Gold Coast. And the experience is like hallucinogenics with no drugs. It's just, it's amazing. So tell me, what did all of that experience that you have, how did that change everything? What happened from there for you moving forward?
It opened me up. So to really answer the question in a short format, it opened my heart, it opened my mind, and it connected me to a part of me that I never knew existed, which was my spirit. So now I looked at myself not so much as a physical being, you know, as a lot of people might think, searching for their spirit. I knew I was a spirit now. I knew that I was consciousness. I knew that this physical body was just a micro like spot or dot in the infinity of existence. So I knew it was nothing. It was nothing, literally nothing. It was just like a moment in time, this body, and that it was just a blessing that I got to be here. So I knew that I was a spiritual being having a physical experience, and that shifted everything. Because once you connect to your soul, once you know, and I don't mean you read it in the scriptures or that, you know, someone told you about it or that you've studied it at college. You can't study spirit. It's an experience where you know, because you feel it, you've tasted it, you've been it. When you definitively know from a knowingness, is the word, a knowingness of a real cognitive, tangible experience of yourself as a spiritual being, then you can't hide from it. And when you can't hide from it, now, for me now, the physical world is a desert. For me, even though it's beautiful, we have mountains and rivers and so on, I'm aware of that, but it's also a desert because almost every human being I come across is disconnected from their spirit because they simply are so distracted with their lives and their thoughts mostly that there's no space for it. And so they go through life feeling so dried up and empty on the inside, even though they feel like they're filled, they're just filling up with crap, like scrolling through social media, watching TV, taking drugs, drinking alcohol, binge eating food. They're filling it up from the outside, you know, going from one person to the other in relationships. Everybody's just like trying, and all that, all the reason why we do all that and why I did all that is we're trying to fill ourselves up. We're trying to feel like we're somebody, when in reality, that's just the ego trying to fluff its feathers and feel good about itself and so that it exists. But because I lost my ego when I had that homeless experience, because my ego was dissolved for me and it was ruined, it was just completely squashed. And I felt like a piece of absolute shit that people just could walk all over because of that. And by the way, all through high school, I was bullied because I was really skinny. So that all played out into it as well to destroy my ego. So because my ego got completely dissolved and then through meditation dissolved even further, I knew that I wasn't my ego. And I knew that everything that I was trying to bring into my life to make me feel better about myself was just a Band-Aid and that it would never work. And it's never been able to work ever since. So for me to be able to share vulnerably was because I had all the holes that we plug up in our psyche. And those holes that we plug up are relationship, money, you know, certainty, safety, all those things that we plug up because of our insecurities, and we need to feel safe and secure, which is, you know, what we hear, that we, what the ego is all about. It wants us to stay safe and secure. So we plug up all these holes in us that we've got from childhood that we believe make us feel good about ourselves and we're strong. But the moment one of those plugs get pulled out, such as a relationship ends or your job ends or you lose money, you get sick, when those things happen, that's just the holes being unplugged that you've had there, believing that you're okay when you're not. And I'd already been to that place where I knew I wasn't okay. So now for me, being vulnerable was simple, because I didn't need to block those. I didn't need to block those holes up. Now those holes were being filled from the inside out, because I was feeling, every time I meditated, I connected to my spirit, and the love and the bliss and the joy would fill me up from the inside out. And so I didn't need to have those things, those attachments that helped me to feel good about myself. So being vulnerable was like just being honest. Well, actually, no, I feel fucking shit. That's how I am. So I would just say that because it was so easy. And I could talk about anything that happened in my past, because it literally couldn't control me anymore. I wasn't terrified. I wasn't terrified of anything. Like, I have nothing in the past I can't talk about, because there's no longer that fear doesn't control my life anymore. And those things like shame, and shame is a huge one, and shame and guilt. No, those things weren't true for me anymore, because of the awareness that I now had and the change in my mindset around who I was. I could look back at and change the relationship at anything that happened in my life just through accepting it and going, you know what, that's what happened. And I could also find forgiveness for whoever did what. And I also, more importantly, found forgiveness for myself. And I think one of the keys to being more vulnerable for me was being able to forgive myself for the choices I made when I didn't know any better, because that was the best I could do then. So I was able to heal that part of me just through that awareness of I needed to forgive myself. And when I went through that process, life became very easy. Now it's very easy for me. You know, now it's very easy. I am so open. Yeah. And some would say that feeling, you know, like an empath is a very energetically open person. I'm an extreme empath. And that used to cripple me, because I would take on other people's feelings and I absorb energy around me, and I'd go into shock really fast. You know, even a loud noise would send me into shock, because my childhood noise wasn't okay. So it would send me into shock, like a door banging loudly or someone yelling. You know, I'd feel the cells of my body freeze in fear.
Me, that's me. You're talking about me. Even now when I hear people arguing, I go into that.
Yeah. Yeah. So part of my healing for that, for those things, is I would consciously walk towards them. So I would put myself into positions where people are yelling at me. And I was very fortunate to find teachers who ran groups where you could do that kind of work, where you could go into where they would consciously and intentionally put you into a space where they would have people role play your parents and then stand over you while you're sitting on the floor and say, you're a fucking idiot, you're no good, you're useless. And then they'd be screaming at each other and, you know, making it, you feel like it's all about, but it was just so beautiful. So I intentionally put myself into positions where all my triggers from my childhood would come up and I'd have to face them, rather than they're in the background there, you know, manipulating me, controlling me emotionally, and also causing me to go into shock and fear. So that's another, you know, so I did that for like 10 years, just one group to another of what I call encounter groups, where you encounter yourself, those parts of you that live in the back, in the dark, that you have never faced. And so that's another message. You know, I don't want to go into teacher mode, but for me, if people really want to, if you want to heal your life, you got to move towards things you're afraid of, not away from them, move towards them. Because even if it's a spider, you know, make friends with it, find a way to, even if you don't want it crawling on your hand, find a way to appreciate it and what it does in life. And don't see it as the enemy, because fear only happens when we don't know we don't understand where the fear is coming from. And sometimes it won't make sense. So everything in my life I was ever afraid of, I've constantly gone, moved towards. And if I find a fear, I move towards it, because that's how you heal it. And that's how you turn it into love.
Wow. Oh my gosh. You're mesmerizing. I know there is going to be a lot of people out there listening to this, and the words that you use, you know, like vulnerability, shame, fear. They're words that you kind of don't want to own up to, but we all feel it. We're all human. We're all going through this. There's no right or wrong. There's no blame. There's no judgment. You know, we talk about how we're shaped by our past, but as I've said a lot of the time, and, you know, in my book too, it's not about blaming people. It's about understanding, because until you understand it, you cannot heal it or move forward from it or grow from it or change it. There's so many different things we can do. And that's what I love about you so much. You're so generous in your sharing, the wisdom, and so kind. You know, like you laid yourself bare here today. I didn't know anything about your past apart from your beautiful wife telling me this story there. And holy goodness, there was. And I'm really, really appreciative of you sharing that. And from there, you've done so much. And I'm going to share links to Michael. I know there's going to be people out there that are going to go, I need to talk to him. And that's great, because we all need that person we feel safe with or connect with. So thank you for all of that. I'm so grateful. Yeah, and hopefully we'll work again together one day, because I can see us doing that from our shared life experiences.
Yeah, look, I think we have a lot to offer together. We've never done that yet, but I feel that time's coming very soon.
I do too. And now I want to ask you some fun questions, because okay. I love to end our chats with some lightness, but also, you know, I'm that girl.
I'm all about fun.
All right. I have to put my glasses back on. So I'm going to ask you some questions based on the Actors Studio. I don't know if you've ever watched that.
No.
No? Okay. So random questions. What's your secret guilty pleasure, Michael?
Secret? Oh, gosh. There's very few of them left. Secret guilty pleasure.
I'm sure you got one.
Oh, look, I'd have to say pizza, really. That's about it.
Pizza's good.
Oh, hang on. I got a better one. Binge watching shows that I like. So that would be my secret. I love to do that. I don't like to wait.
I know. And you can do that now. You can watch the whole season in one day.
Exactly.
It's dangerous, isn't it? Because time goes like that.
It does. I really enjoy it.
As a child, what did you want to be when you grew up? What's your first memory of what you thought I want to be when I grew up?
Astronaut.
Oh, no. I'm so waiting for someone to say that.
I was a Star Trek buff from whenever I can remember. So for me, traveling in space was actually I read every science fiction book in high school. So for me, traveling, this idea of quantum physics and star travel and interdimensional travel, that was kind of my normal way of thinking. I'd read Lord of the Rings by the time I was 9. So, you know, for me, the fantasy world was more real than real.
Beautiful. Astronaut. Where would you like to travel most in the world that you haven't already been? Or maybe where you've been, you want to go back?
I want to do Europe. I haven't done Europe yet. So I'd like to do certain places in Europe, like Machu Picchu, and also get up to Sweden and down to Spain, go over to England and meet some friends I've got over there, Scotland, which is part of my genealogy in Scotland. So, yeah, that'd be some of the few places I want to travel to.
What is your favourite word?
Love.
What do you love most about yourself?
Oh,
well, I stumped you.
No, I'm not. There's so much. I know it's unusual. It's unusual to hear that. There's actually so much I love about myself. And I think it's that I'm a seeker of truth. You know, I love that I've been blessed with the awareness that all I want to know is the truth of my being in this life. That's what I love the most about me, that I'm a true seeker of truth.
I love that. You're a truth seeker. What's your favorite sound?
Silence. I've found the places that I go that are filled with silence are filled with bliss.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Michael. I could talk to you for hours.
Likewise.
I've learned so much about you, and I'm really grateful, and I just can't wait to share this with the world, because you have something very special about you. And I will share links to everything that Michael does. And hey, maybe he and I will do another retreat one day. Never say never. I think we're destined to be in each other's lives.
Yeah, we have complementary skill sets. So there's so much we could offer people doing that.
Yeah. So thank you, Michael, once again.
Thank you too, Susie. And thank you, everybody, for watching and listening.
Watching and listening. They can do both.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And I look forward to seeing and hearing you on the next episode of the Untangling Podcast. Bye for now. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Untangling Series Podcast. I feel absolutely blessed to be on this journey with you. If you would like more details on where to purchase my book, The Untangling, I've popped the link in the notes below. Perhaps you may feel called to work with me one-on-one to support you in your own untangling. I would love that. I offer my services as a coach to walk you through this process in a unique bespoke program created solely for you, because you are unique. Another one of my passions is offering my services as a keynote speaker. I do like engaging with others, as you can probably tell. If any of that is of interest to you, you can contact me directly by the links below, or head on over to my website at susiedejong.com.au, and I will get straight back to you, I promise. I love what I do, and I know what my purpose is: to pay it forward and help others untangle and find their own freedom and joy. So bye for now, and I look forward to seeing you next time.